Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, March 1st, 2018. And with me today, John Martellaro. How's it going, John?
Very good. Good morning.
Good morning. And from the MacCast, Adam Christensen, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Good morning to you as well.
And good morning. And John, I'm assuming that in the back of your mind, you're thinking, maybe he won't say March. Maybe he won't say March.
I gave you a break today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So
dang short months.
Yeah. The inside joke, listeners, is that John loves to try and trip me up before I start recording a show and to get me to say the wrong date. So we should talk about some phishing. So here's the deal. Apple gave us a really great opportunity to talk some about phishing scams because they posted a support article that says, hey, here are the things that you can look for to tell if an email from Apple that relates to your Apple ID, your iTunes store, App Store account stuff is legit or not. And so it's always good to give people little refreshers or reminders about phishing scams and what to look for in emails. So that's what we're going to do. And just to start, for those of you that aren't sure what I mean when I talk about a phishing scam, this is when someone creates an email or a web page that is designed to trick you into thinking that you are on a legit site and then coaxes you into giving up personal information like usernames and passwords, credit card numbers, social security numbers, stuff like that. And then once they've got that, now you're kind of hosed because they can steal your identity or they can just start buying all kinds of stuff with your credit card. And that's what you want to avoid. So Apple's advice is if you get an email from that appears to be from Apple and it looks like it's asking or showing information about your personal account, look for your billing address because Apple always includes your billing address in the email. And so if it's not there, it's not from Apple.
And that's a detail I wasn't aware of.
Yeah. I mean,
I thought I knew how to look for phishing emails, but that was a wrinkle I hadn't been looking for, and that was really cool.
Yeah. So that's something I'll be watching for all the time. And the idea is that the likelihood that someone who's trying to scam you will have your credit card billing address already is pretty slim. So that's one thing you can watch for. And then Apple says that they will never ask you in an email for your credit card number, the security code number for your credit card, your social security number, any of those personally identifying pieces of information, that they will not ask for that in an email.
So, I use a variation of the Spock analysis. Uh-huh. When he was trying to fix the engine compartment of the Galileo 7. He was peering in there and he told Kirk, nothing's wrong, nothing works. I do a variation of that. Nothing's wrong if everything works. If you get an email saying we're verifying your account, check, you know, buy a song, play some music, look around, see if everything's acting normally. If nothing's changed and everything works, nothing's wrong. So don't get too excited until things stop working. Maybe your credit card really did expire or something like that.
Mm-hmm. It's a good thing to
do. Don't let an email be the determiner.
I didn't have a name for it, but that's something very similar that I do. If I get this kind of an email and I'm really not sure, I'll just open up iTunes and click on the accounts tab and log into my account. Because my assumption is if something's broken with the billing, they're going to alert me, you know, from iTunes or the website as well, right? If I go into my billing account information, yes, there's going to be a mark or some sort of an alert saying, hey, this is, you know, your account's not linked up, or, you know, your credit card is expired, or, and there is messages like that if you're in your account management. So yeah, same kind of thing. It's like, I figure if I can get into my account management and the account management isn't reporting through iTunes any issues, then there really isn't an issue.
That's a really good bit of advice. So I'm going to flesh that out for people that might not have really caught what you said.
Right.
When you get an email that says there's a problem with your account, don't click a link in the email. Go right to an app on your computer. So that would be system preferences or settings on an iOS device. And then
go iCloud settings, iTunes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. On a Mac, you can open the iTunes application and look at your account information there as well. So there are ways to go and verify this information without having to rely on a link in an email.
Yep. The point is you're going directly to a source you know to be a valid source, as opposed to with an email, you know, especially with phishing, the whole point is to obfuscate and not let you know that you're not going to, make you think you're going to a legitimate Apple website when you're really not. So take that out of the equation. Go to apple.com and go into iCloud, or go to iTunes on your computer, or open up, you know, the settings on your iOS device, because you know that that is legitimately Apple. So you're starting from a place of knowing it's valid.
Right. And
so I don't know if I should bring this up, but I will, mm-hmm, just for extra authentication. And that is the yellow box. Apple Mail, when you hover your cursor over a link, will pop up a little yellow box showing you the true URL. And if you're ever in any doubt, and you should never click on one of those links, but for fun, just to verify that it was a phishing, you can hover your cursor over that email address. And instead of saying apple.com, it'll say something else weird and be really long and have some code and maybe be in a foreign country. And that's one way to just verify.
I would say that's generally true, but occasionally very clever people will even find workarounds for that. So a common one we've seen is using certain Unicode characters or other characters that look like standard ASCII characters. So they'll register the domain, you know, alpha PPLE.com, right? The alpha character. And so you hover over the link and it looks like it's apple.com, but it's really not apple.com, you know. So, or they'll get, you know, they'll register something close. And a problem with this that I've had recently too is some websites that are legitimate websites will register really odd domains. And Apple even has some odd domains that are legitimately Apple domains, but then also, you know, you have the reverse. So you get kind of, I've had emails or things where I've gotten a false positive. So, you know, like, you know, appleid.com or something like that. That's not one known to be Apple's, but you know what I'm saying? Like Apple will register some weird domains, or other companies register weird domains that are legitimately theirs. I've had this with my credit card companies where it's like, you know, I don't know, chaseauthorization.com or something like that. And they use that domain for all of their, and again, these are ones I'm just making up out of my head, so don't trust any of these. But you get the point, is like, mm-hmm, it can go both ways. So you can have ones that look legitimate that aren't. And I've also had situations where I look at an URL and it's like, that, there's no way that's a real URL.
And it turns
and then
out it
comes
is.
Well,
that brings up a good point, Adam. You should never type in these trusted links. You should save it in a folder called trusted links and click on them after you verify. Because if you type it in, you might make a spelling error and you might go to one of those anagrams.
Right, exactly.
It's malicious. So don't ever do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, in this day and age, you have to be really, really careful. I mean, my general rule to everybody is any little bit of doubt, don't trust it no matter what. You know, do some other method. Call up AppleCare, get on AppleCare chat and be like, hey, I got this thing. What's this all about? You know, just start asking questions before you click anything or follow anything.
Responding to any email you get. Just relax. If nothing's broken, nothing's wrong.
Yeah. And if something's broken, you'll probably be able to tell really well, and you'll know before you get an email. My example is my credit card number was skimmed recently, and And so my card number had to be deactivated, and I had several days before the new card arrived. And in the interim, Apple Music stopped working because Apple could no longer verify my credit card number. And so I knew that it happened because when I asked my HomePod to start playing some music, it told me there was a problem with my account. So that was a pretty clear indication that something was wrong because I couldn't play music.
Right.
Once I had the new card number, popped it in, then everything worked fine again. And at no point though, did I rely on any email from anyone. I went directly into the, into my Apple ID on my iPhone and changed the credit card number there.
Right.
Yep.
That's the general good advice.
Yes. So, all right. Well, I also want to talk about the Apple Watch because Apple has opened up new APIs for developers in watchOS 4.2. And specifically, if you have watchOS 4.2 and an Apple Watch Series 3, you can now do a lot more with detailed tracking for snow sports activities. So it'd be like snowboarding, downhill skiing, Nordic skiing, snowshoeing, stuff like that. And so it's raised the question with at least some people, well, crap, I want to do that. I want to do things like the Stanford Heart Monitor study, but I don't have an Apple Watch Series 3. Does that mean it's time for me to buy a new watch?
Right. Yeah, when to upgrade. This came up, oddly, it was funny because this came up at my user group meeting. Just last night, a gentleman came up to me and was wondering about, now in his case, I don't think he owned an Apple Watch yet, but he had heard about the Stanford study and he knew the Series 3 has been out for a while. And so his question also was like, well, do I, cause I'd like to do those things. Should I buy an Apple Watch now or am I going to buy an Apple Watch now? And is Apple going to have a new one in 6 months? And, you know, when is the right time to upgrade? And I kind of didn't know really how to respond. You know, I said, you've got to maybe decide how important it is, you know, for you to want to get into those features. But yeah, there's always, you know, just like computers and everything else, there's always going to be a new one coming at some point. I don't know that we know at this point if Apple sort of has a set upgrade cycle for Apple Watch. And I kind of get the suspicion that they don't, you know, that they'll update it when they feel they have, you know, significant new features to release. But I don't know if it's going to wind up being, you know, every fall we get a new version. So far, it's sort of trended that way. I haven't gone back and done the research to figure out what the delta
Adam,
between.
I'm looking at Mac Tracker, and the Series 2 came out in September of 16.
Okay.
And the Series 3 came out in September of 17.
Okay, so yeah, so every September so far, it's sort of been like that. The question is, will Apple continue that trend? And I don't think that we know. I think it's safe to assume that there maybe will be a Series 4 in September. But, you know, what new features are going to be in there? Who knows?
Adam.
Oh, sorry.
Hi, Adam.
I don't even think I said anything close to that.
No, you didn't. But
you don't.
I'm going to drop my favorite podcast tip again. So if your iPhone is sitting on your desk, turn it face down.
I flipped it over. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's a great opportunity to remind people. And it's nice that it happened to someone else because usually it's me.
Adam, I'm in the same boat with the watch. I bought my original Series 0 in May of 15 and the excitement that we all had when the watch first came out. And I thought, I wanted to get at least 3 years of use out of it. There were people at the time who thought that Apple was going to try to force us to upgrade our watch every year. And I had a thought that, you know, because it's a watch and because of the legacy of the way people buy and wear watches, that they like to get, you know, good years of good use out of their watch rather than upgrade every year like a snazzy new iPhone. And that has worked out. I mean, if there's a new Apple Watch in September of 17, I'm in September of 18, then that's be more than 3 years, and I'll be happy to just go with the upgrade.
Yeah, I mean,
especially since there's so many things you can't do now with the Series Zero.
Yeah, I think it's also though a tough call too, because a lot of people with Series Zeros, there's still a lot of things that it does do very well, right? And it still functions day to day very well as an Apple Watch, and so it becomes, you know, what is the compelling new feature? I have a Series 2, but only, and the only reason I upgraded really was because when I purchased my Series 0, I went with the Sport Edition, and I learned that I'm pretty hard on my watch, I guess. So I had a lot of scratches on the INX glass, and I decided I really wanted to upgrade to something that was a little more durable, just because of my own usage pattern. You know, I tend to wear it around in the yard and, you know, bump it into concrete walls when I'm doing yard work and stuff like that. So it had some pretty nasty scratches in it. But other than that, you know, I really didn't feel a compelling need to upgrade to a Series 3, and I'm hoping my Series 2 serves me for another couple of years. But yeah, we are starting to now see a few of these new things that come out, and I'm really kind of curious, what about the new, you know, I'm not snowboarding or downhill skiing anymore, but what about the new Apple Watch enables those features where, say, a Series 2 can't support those things? And I don't know if it's altimeters or sensors, you know, it's going to be something like that, I'm sure.
Yeah. That's what I've heard, is that the big thing is the altimeter.
It's got a more sophisticated.
You know, we need a sort of a bar chart of these features that shows the beginning of the feature and timeline across to the right, where, you know, here's where the heartbeat monitoring starts in the Series 2, and, you know, just, you know what I mean? Sort of like a watches on the left side and bar charts on the right, where these features kick in. Then you can sort of make a mental note of what features you want and sort of diagnose what model you need to be on.
Yeah. It sounds like we have some graphic design work ahead of us.
It's interesting because, you know, no other product, I think, sort of has the kind of individualistic nature that the Apple Watch does. Like, you talk to people who own an Apple Watch, and there's almost everybody has a different reason. You know, for some people it's the health features, for some people it's, you know, the reminders and things like that. It's a more personalized product than any other Apple product. And Apple has a lot of products that are very personalized to people. You know, people own certain devices for very specific reasons, but the Apple Watch is one of those where I think really when people ask, you know, should I buy a new one or should I upgrade, or you really have to sort of come back to them and say, well, what are you know, what are your key features? What are the things that you do? Like, for example, with the snow sports thing, you know, a lot of people don't do snow sports. So it's like, well, if you're not doing that stuff, then, you know, maybe you don't need to upgrade quite yet. Maybe you want to wait for that other feature that's more relevant to you before you plunk down that money.
I was really pleased that the LTE watch had an option, that the Series 3 had an LTE option and a non-LTE option.
Right.
For those people who were concerned about having a high-powered LTE radio on their wrist 18 hours a day.
Yeah. So, you know, it becomes a very individualized conversation that you need to have almost with yourself about, you know, what are my use cases, and am I going to really be able to take advantage of the new sensors and features that are built into the watch?
You know, the rule of thumb that I always gave people when they were buying computers back when I had my consulting business was, you buy what you need when you need it. And
right.
And that's it, because otherwise you're not buying what you need. And in a business environment, that means now you are falling behind your competition. But with Apple Watch, I mean, it's still the same. Buy what you need when you need it. But there's that whole personal spin that you're talking about, Adam, that comes into play as well. And I think it makes it a little more difficult for people to decide when to pull the trigger and buy an Apple Watch or upgrade an Apple Watch they already have.
I have a good example of that.
Okay.
I would be eager to buy a new watch that does glucose monitoring. And if I buy a new watch in 2018 that doesn't have that, and then right away Apple comes out with a feature like that soon afterwards, I would be very bummed.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And but then you also run the risk of getting in the cycle of, well, I'm going to wait for new features. and you're always right. waiting for new features, and then you never get your Apple Watch or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a tough call. And I'm with you guys. I have no idea if we're going to get another Apple Watch this year, but if we do, it wouldn't surprise me if it's in September.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems to be the cycle for now. But, you know, again, Apple's been changing that a lot too. They've been, it seems like recently they've been more willing to wait for a significant new feature set if something's not ready. So if they have something planned for Apple Watch and for whatever reason, you know, if it is something like glucose monitoring or something, you know, maybe they wait if it's not quite ready to go out. I don't perceive Apple Watch as being a thing that necessarily requires a yearly upgrade cycle to get people to jump in and purchase an Apple Watch. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong on that, but it just feels like a product where if they went 18 months, it wouldn't be that big a deal for Apple Watch sales.
I agree.
I'm with you. Yep. All right. Well, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. Adam, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I think this is twice in a week, so that's new.
That is new. I guess we're privileged this week.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. And John, thank you for being here too.
Thanks for having me as well. It was fun.
Yeah, it's great that you're both here. And listeners, thank you for joining us and thanks for listening. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.